What's going on, guys? It's Zach. Today's podcast is sponsored by 21 Studios, the company that's bringing you the 21 Convention, the 21 Convention Patriarchs Edition, and the 22 Convention Make Women Great Again. The links below the episode will bring you to the homepage where you can get your tickets. As you'll see, you've got speakers such as myself, Tanner Guzzi, Elliot Hulse, George Bruno, and many more. They'll be talking to you on and off stage, mixing it up from October 1st through October 4th, and it's bring a friend free. So when you buy one, you get a ticket. You can bring a friend, and if you upgrade to the VIP package, you can attend the main convention as well as that of Patriarchs, or you can bring a friend, just go to one or the other, or you can bring your spouse, have her go to 22 Con while you go to 21 Con. You can make it work in your favor however you see fit. But this fall, we're going live, so grab your ticket now before prices go up. Now let's dive into another episode on the Family Alpha Podcast.
Welcome to the Family Alpha Podcast, a place where men, families, and the truth have a voice. The information shared on this podcast is meant to be applied. Now, here is your host, Zach Small, founder of thefamilyalpha.com and co-founder of thefraternityofexcellence.com. Let's get to work.
As always, I am your host, Zach. Today, I am joined by a friend, a man of faith, a family man, and probably one of the most trained and skilled instructors when it comes to personal defense. I've seen him in action. I've seen him train others. And prior to kicking this episode off, we were talking about how just recently he took someone who was a very amateur, just your average man, you know, family coming together, looking to improve their efficiency and effectiveness with, you know, their firearms. So today's episode is on security. I am joined by Mr. Swift. Mr. Swift, welcome to the show.
Zach, finally get to say Zach. Welcome. Thank you. And I'm honored to be here.
So on the last episode, I had Dent McGee. And we were talking first aid. And now I want to touch, you know, the yin-yang to that. So instead of handling, you know, the damage, actually being able to enact damage or protect yourself in those areas. So for those who don't know, what's the background of Mr. Swift? You know, where are you coming from? And, you know, I know why I chose you, but let's let the good listeners know why you're on this show for this topic.
Hey, funny about first aid. I was a paramedic for 9 years as well. Prior to being a law enforcement officer and PMC, a private military contractor. Back in the day, you would say mercenary. That's firearms funny. Instructor, edge weapons instructor, use of force instructor for State Academy for the law enforcement. Concealed handgun permits for citizens to get their concealed handgun permits through the state or their county sheriff's office in Colorado. Also raised in the South prior to moving to Colorado. So always growing up hunting. My dad was in the military. My grandfather's in the military. So firearms were always around, whether it be hunting or self-defense purposes as well. In conjunction with that, I'm just now finishing up a business degree. So I have now criminal justice and a business degree. And combined with all that, plus a medical background for use of force, the effectiveness of certain tools and tool placements is very immediate. So again, I'm getting older and I'm kind of getting lazy. So if a conflict or a combat situation arises, I'm definitely taking the least amount of effort to put somebody down the quickest.
When I was going to kick this thing off, you know, and people can obviously already tell, there are many ways to skin a cat, and you know many more ways than I. So you're the expert here. And what I plan to do is kind of just facilitate and guide your brain on personal security from the macro to the micro. So we're going to start with the house, you know, then the vehicle, and then just the person, you know, the body. With that, though, I want to make the disclaimer. There are so many ways. So what we're about to go over is not the only way to do things. But it is, through your lessons and your experiences, the best ways that you have found. But I don't want people to get hung up and jiu-jitsu versus Krav Maga. Like, come on now. Let's not split hairs. This is about overall security.
Overall security. Again, even though I'm older and I've been, 20-year vet, law enforcement, and da-da-da-da, I'm still learning. I always learn. Every single day, I add something to my toolbox, if need be, later. There's always something to learn.
You know, what's interesting about that too is it's not just your kit, you know, your physical toolbox, but also the mental toolbox. The difference, like, oh, you know, we've got a new way to think about things, a new perspective. You know, we're always growing, always learning. So for those listening, this is like your baseline. Build upon this.
Baseline. So house. I'm a Christian. I am big on faith, not religion. Religion kills faith. Again, so just faith. The house could be a quick, easy metaphor for your family. So the door, that's the husband, that's the father. Your door needs to be solid. It needs to be grounded in the foundations. And it needs to be very sturdy. So again, be the rock, be the anchor, whatever you need to be for your family. The quick, easy thing for your door, every house, apartment, condo, townhome, whatever else, should be at least some sort of fire door. So it should be a solid core door, more than likely. Your quick, easy thing will be to hopefully you can either have one or already can go get one, an electric drill, a corded one, not a battery one, because you're going to be sinking in about 3.5-inch screws, wood screws. Take out the screws of the kick plate or add a bigger kick plate, strike plate, and you want to sink your screws in, again, all the way through the door sill into the jamb as well. Probably 2 or 3 on your kick plate side. And then at least 1 3-inch screw per hinge plate on the hinge side. Preferably, you know, 3 screws, but at a minimum 2 per hinge. That will prevent a boot in, a quick ramp or a kick to the door to get it to come open forcefully. That will prevent a lot of things. There's videos out there, SWAT teams, other teams, fire departments. They test them on houses that they're going to burn down anyways. So they try to get dual purposes out of a facility or a residence prior to its destruction. So there's some good videos on there. But again, that's my recommendation. There's also some aftermarket things you can buy on Amazon to re-strengthen your door. That's the first thing. And again, that's the front door.
So just starting out, I've already got a few questions and I'm sure people listening will too. So a lot of really high-end houses that I see, their front doors are primarily glass for the right look, you know, it's open, it's welcoming. Right. Is that not, you know, counterproductive to if somebody's trying to do damage to your home or to enter, isn't that the easiest way for them to get in? I mean, it's just glass.
Yeah.
So
it is. So
what's the balance there though? The like people want the aesthetic, but they don't have the security. And if you're in a high end place, you know, you want to make sure you're protecting your assets, but at the same time, you know, you don't want to just be, you know, fear mongering, like shutting down and creating a bunker. So what's the balance there?
So your balance would be, you know, is it pretty still? There's glass. If there's glass on your front door, you know, can someone squeeze through it if the glass is removed? If not, then you're pretty okay. If you have glass near your front door locking mechanism, maybe double check or consider removing just a knob on your deadbolt to a key on both sides. So if your door is deadbolted with a key and you remove the key, if someone were to break the glass, they can't just reach in and unlock your deadbolt and then open your door. You know, don't make it too easy for some nefarious person to get into your house. There's also an aftermarket company called ShatterGuard. They sell the kits or they have installers to come do it. Government buildings, corporations have used ShatterGuard since the late 80s. ShatterGuard is a 3M film that's applied to both sides of the glass. Again, so it basically becomes a laminate piece of transparent material. Again, it won't, per their website, it will not stop bullets, but it will keep it from shattering and falling out of the plane that it's in. So again, the glass will break, but it won't be a opening or an entry point.
Now, what are your thoughts on I don't know what it's called, the nomer that if somebody wants to get in your house, they're going to get in your house. You know, it seems like these are really good deterrents. You know, some people, like I have 2 dogs and I think that's right. One of my greatest alarm systems is those 2 dogs. but people are like, well, no matter what, if they want to get in, they can get in. You know, what's your response to that?
Again, it's true. It's a no-mer because it's a truth. If someone is truly trying and wanting and desiring and intently trying to gain entry into your residence, have a deterrent. You know, the deterrent is, again, just a deterrent. Sorry, stuttered that one.
Nailed it.
But a lot of these. The deterrent is to gain you time to either escape or harden your momentary situation, you know, trying to boot in that door with those screws. If they continue, it truly might take a good 3 minutes, which is not a long time, but it feels like eternity. You have 3 minutes to get your kids, get them in a safe room, have someone call 911, get your sidearm or shotgun or dog from the backyard, let them in so the dog can play with somebody who's not supposed to be there, a knife, or truly get your family and get them out the back door, to the garage, the car, whatever. The deterrent is a deterrent. It's not a absolute.
Now, as jacked up as it might sound, you know, your goal, or at least my goal, is when somebody's looking for the house to pick, they're going to bypass mine. They're like, no, that house looks like it's going to be hard to get into. And so you're not trying to get your neighbors robbed, but you are trying to make your house not the house that looks weak. And that's, I mean, so do you believe that putting up like ADT stickers is a deterrent? Or do you think just, you know, I've had people say kids with bikes or any like dog or animal, it makes it look like it's there's a lot of variables that you have to contend with, a kid showing up or an animal getting out, compared to some house that's just looks like it's wide open and nobody's home.
There's an older joke from the South, you know, no one's going to rob a house that has an engine hanging from a tree, you know, because, you know, rednecks live there. Rednecks all have guns. But again, to be the deterrent, ADT stickers, with the current situation and circumstances in our world right now, ADT stickers don't mean nothing. Truly, they don't. These looters don't care, because something's going to happen. It doesn't matter because they're quick, like a squirrel. They run in, get what they want, and they leave. You know, no one's going to show up in time. The deterrent would be to. I really can't give an answer for that, just because of my understanding of mob mentality, riots, because it ebbs and flows so animalistic. It's hard to say, oh, the ADT sticker is it hanging on my window, you know, whatever, maybe an NRA sticker, you know, shit, we got guns. But then again, that makes you a target for a different group.
Yep.
So I can't give a good answer for that, given the current situation that could come to suburbia as opposed to municipalities or metro areas.
So you make a great point. And for a second, I was like, oh, I finally stumped him. But then you hit the point that really drove it home, is that the point is you can't rely on the deterrent. So let's bring it to the next step. You know, with the climate that we're living in, you can't rely on your NRA sticker or your ADT or your cameras that you have around. You cannot rely on those to push it back, because let's face it, I mean, we have riots and protests. I'm in the middle of nowhere, Rhode Island, and we had a freaking protest. So if we're starting to feel the effects of this, the cities most definitely are. Those houses right outside the cities, it's going to flow out. So let's shift a little towards the home security, that is the people inside the home. So weaponry, placements of that, you know, how do you go about, and I know you've shared classes, you've done courses on this. How do you go about arming a home for an individual? Let's say you're nuclear, mom, dad, son, daughter, like my family. Boom. If I came to you, normal house, middle America, what would you run me through on where I should place weapons, how I should do this, you know, run a safe room? How does that work?
So it's actually pretty easy, and not a lot of people talk and would and would approach it the way I do. So I always start, especially with the family, I start with the family, the whole family, not just, we're not just running, jumping in with, you know, guns here, guns there, knife here, you know, flashbang over there, smoke over there, you know, punji sticks over there. We're going to talk, we're going to discuss it, you know, hey, if, and it's a good question for kids. Hey, if daddy says, I need you to go here right now, you know, I'm not trying to make it a military family, you know, do what you're told, when you're told, exactly how you're told. But kids are very in tune, even for the fathers who bust their ass and are gone 80 hours a week, kids pick up on the tone. So if something were to come up, you as a father need to truly understand your tone and your word selection. If something scares you, you don't got to go, hey, I'm scared, this scared me, you know, whatever else, but go, hey, go to the bedroom right now. And kids will pick up on it and go, and again, my kids do it, but I'll give an example for my cousin. Not a cop, not military, not anything else. He's a painter, no big deal. The situation came up one time and he immediately told his daughters, you know, hey, get to the basement right now, close the door. They caught it, they heard it, they heard the alertness level in his tone and his word selection. He's never told us to do that before, so they did it. It was ended up being a meth head banging on doors trying to get some money for something, I don't know. But they did it. They followed along. They did exactly what they were told. So again, back to yours, it would, my initial 10, 15, 20 minutes would be, hey, if dad says something and you hear something, something's weird, don't question, do it. Do it quickly. And then, because dad's got to be dad. You know, dad's got to be the hammer now. You know, wife, same way. In situations like that, everyone's got a job. Again, military, everyone's got a job. I need you to do your job and don't worry about me doing my job, because it's a gear. My advice would be, wives are your dispatcher. You call to get extra help and let people know. 911 dispatch. If you're really far out removed, like Montana, Wyoming, sometimes the sheriff's office and the state can't get there so quick, but it's a little community of houses and they're all family. It might be, hey, I'm calling cousin Jed and he's going to come too, you know, or my crazy uncle Earl, who was in Vietnam, he wants to play now. We're calling him too.
You know, your use of the term play is incredible. Call play, like everybody's like, oh my God.
I know. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry. But it's probably because there's been too much incidences over my life. But that's the team. The team jobs and the team work. Again, but your wife would be, you know, she did her job and now she's got her secondary job, which would be right on you, not on you, but on your six, behind you to help you out, support, or, you know, wife, your job is to get to the kids and stay right there, but you're still armed too. In case I am no longer the hammer, I am a new deterrent from whatever is coming. It sucks. Sometimes even in law enforcement, you know, when we decided to, instead of for active shooters scenarios, instead of waiting outside and getting a group of cops together, when we started, they call it John Wayne in it. But again, it's solo officer response. When we decided to start doing that across the country, it was the mindset change, especially for first responding officers who may not be SWAT. But I made sure I did it in the academies. I gave them the skills to be SWAT, but they might not be it. But solo officer responses, you might just be the fucking speed bump until another officer can stop him. You know, or in like a school shooting or a hospital or anything like that, I might be the speed bump from this guy or person running through and killing everybody, So these other, this little group of people, I'm that speed bump before they can get there. And again, it's a mindset change. It's hard. It sucks, but it's hard. But it's what's needed in those situations.
In our community, I think we talk a lot about the mindset. We talk a lot about, you know, are you willing to do what needs to be done? How far are you willing to go? And that's just, you know, the nature of the men that have come together in our little niche community. And that's what we, that's interesting to us. That's what we talk about. There are a lot of people, and you recently spoke about like a software guy, you know, your cousin was the painter. How do people who are not really on that spectrum and they're just waking up, they're just realizing like, hey, the cops might not get here by the time I need them. I'm going to go out and get my firearm. You know, you've told two stories that really stand out to me. The first is where you trained. I was a man and the wife. And at the end of it, the wife was super confident. And she's like, yeah, you know, we can defend this house. And the other one was the one recently where they had just bought their own firearms and they were going through together. And at the end of it, their confidence was up. You know, it's almost like you helped them tap into what we've been talking about for freaking years now. How do we get that for these others who might not be able to, they either can't afford or they don't have the time to fly you out to train them? How can they replicate that in their lives?
It's funny you ask. Two things. I'm actually currently working on an e-course. I have two other partners or whatever else who are helping me with the tech part because I'm not a tech guy. You know, I'm just a shooter. I'm an instructor. They're helping me with this. I'm working on a video course. So you don't have to have me personally there. So you don't got to deal with all the, my ums, my pauses. It's just something happened, but you'll have it. Other than that, you can reach out to, I would truly, verify or vet an instructor where you're at. You want somebody who can take a complex thing and make it easy to understand, which I've been told that I could do that. Which to me is a, you know, a feather in my little hat. But again, you said I, you know, flippantly say play when I'm, it really means combat. It means conflict. It means live or die. But to me, it's just play. It's a mindset change. The other way to do that is visualization. In law enforcement, we can't say visualization because it's too big a word. You know, used to pick on me all the time for using big words. I can actually use big words too. But for law enforcement, especially for recruits, because they're being, you know, just like in boot and AIT, you know, I give you little bits of chunks, little words. So it sinks in because you're under stress. You're learning something new. And you're also having to deal with all the politics stuff too, of being the recruit. You're being the boot. You're being the grunt, you know. But with that, it is, anyways, in law enforcement, we call it filming. You know, play the what if games. You have to play the what if games because if you don't train the thought process for what if, then you can't do the if then statements, questions, scenarios in your own head. So, quick one. What if, you know, Red Dawn, the Russians fall from the sky? What then? Okay. Oh, we went from what if to what then. Understand? Does that make sense?
No, it's perfect. I call it negative visualizations. It's same exact thing, except I use the more syllables. But it's all, what if somebody broke in the door? What would I do? And that's actually how I found the placement of my weapons is, all right, I would go here. And then I would run it through and I'm like, well, that doesn't make sense. I can't do this. So I got to adjust. All right, now it makes sense. But if I didn't play the game, I didn't do the filming, I would never have known. It's almost like, if you do it 1,000 times in your head, you create a muscle memory, even though you might have only done it through muscles once because you're like, oh, I've already thought through, I'll do this. It's like an argument too. People who debate, if you say this, I'm going to say that. If you do this, I'm going to, you know, it's you pre-plan an argument. Why would you not pre-plan, you know, a life or death situation?
Oh, yeah. And there's a plethora of actually psychological studies about the visualization, mental visualization to actually, because you're, one of the studies said that our brain does not understand the reality versus the visualization. It doesn't, which you just covered it too. You know, I've done it 1,000 times in my head. And then if something happens, it just happened, even though I've never actually truly physically, you know, fought in my, you know, front hallway near the door with, you know, this machete I have stuck under the well, you know. So again, if you do the what ifs, and then you also have to follow it up with a if then, you know, if a guy kicks in my front door, I'm then going to, you know, do those in your head, and your mind will start to smooth out those hesitations. Again, the OODA loop, the observe, orientate, decide, act, by Lieutenant Byrd, or Colonel Byrd now, retired. The faster you can get through that OODA loop against your adversary, the better your chances of actually winning.
I've been getting a lot of DMs. Zach, what a firearm should you have for concealed carry? Zach, what a firearm should you have for home defense? I'm gonna toss that one right over to you. And then every time I get this, I'm just gonna send them this episode. So right now we're talking about the house. When it comes to home security, you think people should be rolling around with pistols and needing that? Or are you thinking like the bigger spread of the shotgun or just straight up the AR and blow through the guy and the door behind him and the wall and possibly your neighbor's house?
That's a myth. I've Is tested it. Yes. A full metal jacket AR round will do that, but you don't want that for home defense rounds.
I was agreeing with you. I don't think you should be doing that.
No. So if you want an AR for your house, I'm going to jump forward and I'll back up. So if you want an AR for your house defense gun, my suggestion would be an AR pistol, but make sure it is jacket of hollow point ammo. Remington makes a good one. Federal makes a good one. There's another one, but I can't remember right now. Because you want the expansion, because then you won't get over penetration.
Yep.
And again, so then we'll back up. So for a handgun, we'll stick with handgun right now. Your handgun selection would be what fits your hand. You know, I got big paws. Even though God made me short, I'm very dense and thick, but I got big hands. I prefer Glocks, and here's why. Glocks are relatively still inexpensive. If you get into a use of force situation, you don't get to see your gun for about a year. If it's a Glock, I can go buy another one. If it's a STI, which is a very expensive handgun, you just lost, you know, STI 1911 9mm might cost you $1,200. A Glock, maybe $300. You know, certain places, maybe $500. So again, I prefer Glocks. When Glocks first came out, when I was first in law enforcement, you know, even I was like, you know, these are a piece of shit. This, you know, it's a plastic gun. It's whatever. But then I started seeing them more and more. And then I actually was sent, against my better judgment to Glock Armory School because our department was going to start carrying them and they needed somebody who could actually work on them. So I went to Glock Armory School. I learned so much about Glock firearms. I'm like, I'm done. This is the only, for me and for law enforcement, the only sidearm that should be around. It's not plastic. It's a polymer, and it's an engineered polymer. It's freaking awesome. The metal on themselves they call it a tenifer finish. They actually make the metal harder just below diamonds on the Rockwell hardness scale. The barrels themselves are not drilled. They take a die or a form, they put that in the barrel, then they hammer forge the barrel to that for the landing groove. So the spiral thing you see in there, that actually forms a better seal on the projectile, the round, so you actually get better ballistics, you get better distance, you get better velocities, as opposed to almost every other barrel out there. So that's my Glock pitch. I wish I was affiliate sale, but I'm not. Go get a Glock.
As a Glock 19 owner, I'm very happy to hear this answer.
I mean, I've taken Glocks, I've thrown them, I've beat them against the wall. My favorite story I had some other instructors at a different private range. They were bashing on me and my buddy for shooting Glocks, and they were cops too. And we're like, okay, hey, let's play horse. You know, the old horse game, you know, basketball. So we said six rounds. So put six rounds in a magazine. That's it for the game. And my other guys were like, okay, you know, cool. So I took my Glock 19 and I It was cleared. I threw it down the range, 25 yards. You know, sights flying and everything. I run down there. I pick it up, load it, and 6 rounds to the chest of the target. And then clear my gun and holster up. And I'm like, okay, your turn. And they go, we're not doing that. I go, you're H. Let's go for O. And they're like, we're not playing with you. So a Glock 18C, which is not available because it's a fully automatic, or it's a select fire handgun. When Glock came to one of my departments, we were allowed to, I melted the front sight off of the gun by shooting so many rounds through it so fast. The rep took it over to the drinking fountain to cool it off. And I'm like, you can't do that. It's going to crack. He goes, they don't crack. They don't break like that. It's not real. It's not, he goes, it's not a normal metal. Even though I already knew I had Tennifer finish, almost red hot, straight water. And then we kept shooting. I mean, for me, I've shot and tested and P&E'd, test and evaluated plethora of manufacturers, models, what have you. I like Glock. I wish Glock made subguns. I really do. Submachine gun. But for me, it again, if something happens and you do have to engage with somebody with a firearm, and law enforcement still funded, you know, your gun's going to go away for a while. You know, if you have $1,200 or $1,500 in a gun, you can't just go buy another one. Well, I mean, unless someone's, you know, you're an e-commerce guru, you can go drop, you know, drive your Maserati down and go to the gun range and buy another STI and not even blink. But for everybody else, the value, the your ROI on a Glock is, to me, it's a no-brainer. But that's just me. And again, go play, go see what fits your hand, go to a range. They'll allow you to rent guns. Most of the ranges will allow you to rent guns to shoot. The range we went to that you guys came to in Bristlecone in Lakewood, they have rentals out the wazoo. You know, we were able to play with that full automatic AK.
We shot a gold-plated AK. The fact that I can say that, a fully gold-plated AK-47, we shot fully automatic. It was amazing. But the fact they have that, they've got everything up to that.
They've got Glocks. They've got SIGs, SIG Sauer. They've got the Tauruses, which is a used to be a crap manufacturing company. Taurus has upped their game in the late 90s. So again, a Taurus Millennium G2 is almost a Glock knockoff for about 280. Again, it's just like the Glock 19. The internals are almost the same. They're not exactly the same. Again, so if you can't afford a Glock, maybe look at the Taurus Millennium G2. It's a 9mm. I think it's 15 rounds, 15 plus one, which means 15 rounds in the magazine and one in the chamber. That's affordable. If you can't afford that and you had a hand-me-down revolver and that's all you can afford, then you train with that. If you train with what you got, train with what you can afford, but make sure that you train. Whether it be live fire, that gets expensive pretty fast. There's dry fire training options as well. The class I just taught for my new friend, we did some dry fire training class, portion of my class. And he like blew his mind. He's like, oh my God, I can do this. We don't got to go out. I don't got to go to the range. I don't got to drive somewhere to go do it. So we set up, my wife and I set him up with a little course for him and his wife to have a date night at home dry fire training. You know, that's fun. And it's applicable. Again, so there's that. So go find what fits your hands. Try to find someone who's not a salesman. You want an instructor to talk about guns. What fits your hands, what you can afford, what is legal in your area, because I know certain places in California can only do 10 rounds, you know, blah, 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 blah. I'm not an expert on all the restrictions across the country. I know maybe 4 states well, just because of what I used to do. But that's just for handguns. If you wanted you talked about the scatter gun, a shotgun. Shotguns are great. Shotguns are freaking awesome. They're a true cannon. If you can put it in that shotgun round, it will go out. It's cool. There's exotic rounds, there's simple rounds, there's slugs, which is, I'm a big fan of 3.5-inch slugs, which is 1 ounce of lead flying at about 900 feet per second. That's freaking awesome. Anyways, for home defense purposes, I advise against shotgun.
Really?
And here's why. And here's why. It takes two hands to use a shotgun. I mean, our smartphones have a speakerphone option on it too, but how many times has your speakerphone or whatever else just shut off or dropped the call? You know, it takes two hands to do this, to walk around or to sit and to operate, you know, one boom, click, you know, we got a racket, you got to do all this stuff like that. With your AR, again, it takes two hands unless you get the AR pistol, then you can just, you know, one hand wield it. For at home, at night, security purposes, defense, I truly advise a handgun with a weapon mounted light. Because you can turn your light on, leave it on, and still use the phone and still do what you need to do. Or cover the door until the cops get there. Or Uncle Ed gets there with his who knows what, you know.
That's AR very interesting to me. So to me, the AR is off the list. I don't think that's a home defense. You're just too close quarters. And I just think you're going to end up, like I said, piercing your wall and hitting your neighbor. So I always broke it down to the pistol or the shotgun. And in my mind, those who train, so I have a local Beagle club, so I can go, I can mm-hmm. shoot wherever I want. It's awesome. There's one where you can walk around and stuff. Really cool. We go there. The family loves it. That's where I go with the pistol. That's where I train. With the shotgun, though, it's just so simple. But I understand your point on if you're holding a call, I mean, you got to talk to somebody, right? And you do want help to show up because, you know, not a lot of people are going to be able to hold somebody off. Like, you need help fast.
And dispatch, the moment they click the button to pick up your 911 call, it's auto recording the entire time, which again is another form of witness management in case something bad happens.
Yep.
You know, if they're still, if you call 911 and you're in your bedroom, door locked, you got shit thrown in front of your door to make another deterrent, and you tell the dispatcher, hey, I'm in my room. I'm in my bedroom. We're all in our bedroom. We're behind the bed. You know, I've got shit thrown in front of the door. And the dispatcher auto recording can record whoever it is still trying to boot your interior door. Again, common sense and the DA would already say, well, they've already made it to the main front door. They're inside the residence. They're trying to boot in another interior door. If for some reason you feel the need, again, it's not your choice. You feel the need to defend your family by shooting through the door without true target identification, but it's audio recorded that they're inside the house, they're booting a door that's locked, already inside. That's pretty airtight self-defense case. And again, most states for your castle doctrine, your self-defense laws, if the criteria is met, you are criminally and civilly indemnified. You're protected.
It's a situation I hope nobody finds themselves in.
No,
let's be prepared for something that we don't have to use. You know, let's just err on the side of having this discussion so people who need to hear it. And that before right. we shift from home to vehicle, I do want to talk on that final point, which is the guy who goes out and he saw something in the protests. He's like, oh, I'm going to buy my first gun. Maybe he shoots 50 rounds tops. He buys the gun. He brings it home. And he's like, ah, you know, God, I'm John Wayne. And he never touches it again. That's almost more of a detriment to the family than not having anything. You know, you're uneducated. You're unarmed. You don't know how to properly use it. You think it's a cool toy. What do you think about the guys who think that they're going to rise to the occasion because they bought a gun, but they don't use it? They don't teach their spouse how to use it. They don't teach their children how to use it. And they don't ever play the what if game. They just have a gun and think they're safe.
It sure sounds like the same people who went out and dropped $1,200 on that elliptical or treadmill or Bowflex, and now it's a clothes rack where you throw your fucking clothes on it. You know, now you're a fat fuck who can't see his dick because his belly got too big, but it's a good clothes rack. To me, again, so I know it's very harsh, and some people just got really mad at me. But to me, that's what it is. It's about the same. But again, I want to apologize. I want, my desire is for everyone to be almost truly self-sufficient. We should only need law enforcement for those things that we can't or don't want to truly handle. But to protect your family, you know, you're a man. God puts you in that spot, that role on purpose with a plan in mind already. Please don't falter. Don't advocate. Don't let someone else rule and run and lead your family. You know, if you're going to go buy a gun, train with it. You don't have to burn rounds, live fire training. You don't have to burn rounds. You can do dry fire. Again, not affiliate, dryfiretrainingcards.com. I think they're on Amazon as well. I think they're like $8. It's a deck of cards. The guys who put it together are special forces. They give you scenarios. So that we don't got to think about it or DM Zach or DM me. You buy these cards and you can make that your date night, or do that for your personal training. Another thing that I advise, or I suggest, take a dime, tape it to one of your walls, kind of high or kind of low, about head high or higher. And then you dry fire. It's just trigger practice because you're dry firing at that dime. Again, you want something small. So back to the movie Patriot, aim small, miss small. So I pick a dime. The guy I just taught the other day, you know, he's a freak because he's left hand dominant. He writes, he does all this, but he shoots right handed.
And when dad is, it's ridiculous.
Oh, I'm like, because he was asking some questions. I'm like, you have an advantage that I don't have, fucker. You know, because you have my hand. So I'm right-handed. So this hand, basically, think of it as manual transmission. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 gears that I can go through. My left hand, 4 reverse. That's it. You know, it'd be, even though I still practice shooting left-handed, single-handed, in case something happens to this whole arm or hand, I can still engage and do the business and play the way I need to play left-handed. But he has manual transmission on both hands. I'm like, that's an advantage that, oh my God, you still want to do software? We can probably get you to a combat or a competitive shooter level. And he's like, really? I go, honestly, yes, because you can do everything the same on both hands. I can't do that. I really can't. I try really hard to. But with that, I forgot where I was going. I got all excited.
No, it's good. So we're talking about the guy training, you know, doing the dry fire, little things people can go through.
Yeah. So your target. So the two things are weapons manipulation. So how to load your gun, how to clear your gun, how to clear a stoppage. People call them malfunction. They're not a malfunction. It's a stoppage. Your gun stopped shooting for some reason. A malfunction is if a gun broke. You don't fix a malfunction on the range or in a combat situation. You clear a stoppage to get back into the fight to play. So the dry fire training cards help with moving, target acquisition, target identification. The dime helps with trigger manipulation because it's a smooth, steady rear pressward draw, or a trigger press is what you need. So your gun doesn't do some weird stuff right before the round breaks at the end of the barrel, because that's how I know you're missing. So when I teach, I don't look down range at your target. Honestly, it freaks people out too. I'll step right off to the side and I only look at your gun up to your shoulders and maybe your face. That's where I look. And I can tell exactly how you pulled that one, or you pushed that one, or you healed that one, which healed means it goes higher because you do this. Push, pull, hip, down, what do you want to call them? I can tell. I'm like, oh, and it freaks people out. So I'm like, oh, you went to the left. And but they're looking at the target and they'll go, shit, how'd you know that? I'm like, I watched your hands. So with a pistol, it's truly a skill and an art, because you only have two pieces of meat that points of contact on a pistol. So any minute movement truly affects, and it exponentially affects where your rounds go. So the dry fire helps with being able to click the dry gun, without the front sight or the barrel even moving, because that's what you want. The weapon and manipulation, when you do dry fire, pressure trigger, you know, do your full extension, sight alignment, sight picture, sight acquisition, pressure shot, break it, cycle your sidearm, go back on target, and then do a trigger reset. Because you don't want to slap your trigger. So it's a click, cycle, reset, and then do your follow-up shot. That's what I advise. People will blow it off. People will probably bash on this video. You know what? I don't care. You're not hurting my feelings. You know, cause I'm like a duck. Off. But the people who do those dry fire drills, those weapon manipulation drills, guess what? Those are your competitive shooters. Those are your high-tier gunfighters. Again, so, you know, take it for what you will, but truly, hear me, you need to do it to raise up where you were at before. I dry fire train probably about 10 minutes a day in the morning. If I had more time, I would do it probably twice a day, but no more than 15 minutes at a time, because then you'll mentally get exhausted.
So it's safe to say this is a perishable skill. I mean, you're a professional doing this for years and you still do it daily.
Very,
I really want to drive that point home to people listening. Like, look, you shot last month. That doesn't mean you're proficient now. This is a daily thing.
No. But people get hung up on the, I got to go to the range. I got to shoot. I got to go buy ammo. You don't, you truly don't. I mean, our economy might go down, might stay the same, might come back up. I don't know. Buy ammo, by all means. Have ammo, because it's going to fucking hit the fan. But to train, you don't got to burn those rounds. You know, I have some friends. But he tells me, he goes, I buy rounds, I buy ammo, but I save them for the zombies. I train dry.
So. I believe both is absolutely the best, because shooting's fun. It's not all doom and gloom. Like you're saying, playing horse, having a good time. My wife, she has very small hands. I'm like you, like, I'm not tall, but my hands are big. And the Glock 19's a bigger gun. It doesn't fit my wife's hands. For me, it's perfect. It's very comfortable. But for her, even she loves to go out there, and it's a fun thing to do. I mean, some people like to fish. You know, I like that. Some people like to shoot. I also like that. So don't think that it's just – is not also a recreational thing, because then you start, you know, I met a few guys with very, very high skill sets when it comes to shooting. They're shooting 22s for competitions and stuff. It's awesome.
Yeah.
Not really my thing. I like the bigger caliber. I just enjoy the bang stick that goes pew. Like, I'm all about it. So it's fun to remember that you can have a good time with it as well, but it's still training. Yeah. When you go out there, you shouldn't be, even when you're having fun, you shouldn't just be, you know, messing around. Like, you're still training while you're having a good time.
Oh yeah. Don't be flippant about it. You know, if you're going to shoot, then you shoot. For concealed handgun permit holders, you know, you have a holster. Hopefully you have a holster. But even with that, I'd recommend training just on the draw. You know, training for law enforcement, training from the holster. I have the guys on the range, the recruits on range, 100 hours. Okay. So they're drawing a ton. They're shooting a ton. Their weapons manipulation, a ton. At a certain point, we start really working on target identification to make their brains start thinking faster. You know, because it's always a crawl, stand, walk, jog, and then we're going to run. And I have to do that because I always have to train for the lowest as I teach. But if you have a holster, are you comfortable? Are you confident in drawing one-handed, even from under concealment? Can you clear your shirt? Get that purchase on that sidearm, clear your holster, and get it up into your workspace confidently, smoothly, fast. Not that we're going for speed, you're going for smooth, but again, smooth is fast. And then also, truly in combat, you have to have smooth and you have to have fast. But you don't get there without the work beforehand. Just like going to the gym. You know, I want to lose some extra pounds. get your ass to the gym or get your ass to the track. You got to put in the work. Because if you don't put in the work, when, if your number's called, you know, someone's going to stand over you. And that's not fun.
People like, they might think you're a little extreme with 100 hours, but I've seen enough YouTube videos of the pulling the trigger while trying to pull it out of the holster and they shoot themselves in the thigh. Yeah. You got some main veins down there. You got some arteries cruising you don't want to blast.
Oh, yeah.
So I think the 100 hours is not excessive.
Oh, no. The 100 hours isn't my choice. Truly, if it was just Swift, I would have people on the range before they can get to, out of the academy 500 rounds, 500 hours. So that's just, again, it's law enforcement. So it's minimal passing scores because I want everyone to pass 100.
Yep.
You know, it's, I prefer pass or fail. Those are the easiest tests to study for. You pass or you fail. You're done.
Go, like no go, life. That clear.
Yeah, kind of like life. You know, if something happens, you either live or you didn't. But, so 100 hours on the range, and that's just for sidearms. That's just for pistols because of the, you only have 2 points of contact. For shotgun day, and it's a day, I have them on the range 7 hours. It's an 8-hour course. I give them an hour lunch because with a shotgun, you have 1, 2, 3, 4 points of contact, there's not a lot of movement. You'll know that. You'll feel that. That's easier. Really, the most of the time for the shotgun day is loading, unloading, and operation of the sidearm or the long gun because it's that simple. Again, 4 points of contact, but a handgun, again, 100 hours is really to cover the liability for the department, the agency, the city, the municipality, and to get people to that point where, you know, it's only 2 points of contact. That's a lot of freaking movement. Again, liability purposes only.
I want to shift gears a little bit. I think we covered home. I think we covered home as well as firearm selection well. That was excellent. Now, vehicle. You're seeing a lot of videos of people driving and then they find themselves, oh shit, the road's blocked by a bunch of people protesting. I have my lessons and what I passed on to my family. It's, you don't stop. We both drive Wranglers. You keep going. I've seen and heard stories of people getting ripped out of their vehicles, robbed, their heads smashed in. What is your, you know, what knowledge could you pass on to those who are thinking about vehicle security?
Vehicle safety, security. This is, it's so common sense. You're going to think I'm stupid or I'm regurgitating other people's stuff. Pull your head out of your ass. Turn off the damn Bluetooth speaker thing, for your car. If you have those, and here's why. When you're driving, in the country, cause you can see freaking everywhere. In municipalities and metro areas, you got buildings, you got alleyways, you got, as you're driving, you got stop signs, stop lights. You say Denver's stop lights are usually roughly 53 seconds before the light will go from red to green. 53 seconds is a long time for me to come up and do something if I want to somebody in a car. But turn off that damn thing. Don't be on the phone while you're driving in a metro area because you're, for one, certain cities, states, you know, you can't drive and be on their phone too because it's distracted driving. And it is a citation. But you need to be aware you're driving. That's your main deal to get somewhere safely. If you, my kids always, you know, you're driving slow. Well, I got precious cargo in a car. Shut up. You know, it's one of those fun things. But it's the truth. I'm driving very cautious, very defensive when they're in the car too. If I'm by myself, you know, I might use my earbuds to, if I need to talk on the phone, I try not to, while I'm driving, especially like in Denver. But if you're driving, you know, be very, very aware again, where you sit, you got a rearview mirror, you got two side mirrors, you got a front windshield. You could almost see 360 around your car. Almost. There are certain blind spots, but again, as you're driving around, and you get into those, it's all a choke point in a city, you know, because there's always cars in front of you, cars beside you. You're stuck. You're in a, think of it as mobile fish in barrels. You know, don't be the fish, or try not to be the most attractive fish to somebody who's going to do something. But just being aware of your surroundings. And if need be, while being aware of your surroundings, what's going on? Do you see groups of people? What those groups of people are, what are they doing? Does it look like they're a protest? Does it look like they're just trying to, you know, lunch hour for all the cubicle people trying to go to lunch at the same time, which is almost like a herd? Or what else do you hear around? Hearing a helicopter downtown Denver or wherever else might be normal. It might not be normal. If you hear something, what's going on? Our filtration systems on the cabs of our vehicles aren't the best in the world, which is really good for your safety and security. And here's why. Do I smell smoke? Am I getting a little twinge? Has OC spray been somewhere in front of me as I'm driving into it? You know, tear gas. If you don't know what tear gas smells like, you will immediately the moment you feel it. Is something being used? Sight, sound, hearing. Those will protect you. Those will keep you safe. If something feels a little weird, the traffic flow changes because of what somebody else might see, because again, perspective, they got better angles around the corner up for your left turn. All of a sudden you got a green light, but they're not going, they might see something. Take a moment, look, but again, that's why I say turn off the Bluetooth for your phone in a car. It's a distraction. It's a hindrance. You also, and for just because I'm a little OCD, I don't want somebody else hearing my conversation. The parking lot I was in just the other day, I pulled up and I got out and I hear this guy talking on the phone loudly. And he gets out and he looks at me and come looking at him. And I was like, man, you need to straighten your shit up, because I heard the entire conversation. Well, almost the entire conversation. Dude was cheating on his wife.
And he's got that blasting from the speakers.
He's got, yeah. Man, pull your head out of your ass. First off, don't cheat on your wife. You know, if you're going to do that, just leave. I don't really agree with that either, but don't cheat. It's stupid. It's a waste of time and heartache. But anyhow, turn on the Bluetooth speaker. Don't connect your phone. It's just a pain in the ass. Causes problems. It's a deterrent. It's a distraction for you. You should be driving and watching around what's going on. Again, so sight, sound, hearing. What's going on around you. If for some reason you need to, you are in an open area, parking lot or the street, and somebody comes up, trying to take your milk money, drive off. You don't have to get out. You don't have to engage. You know, leaving a conflict is not losing. You're not a loser. You're not a coward if you're leaving a conflict. If your kids are in the car, get the freak out of there. You don't got to engage. You don't got to be macho man. You know, macho men get killed, and now their kids are being raised by somebody else. Don't do that shit. Protect what you have. You don't got to be you're not the superhero. If somebody's in front of you, let's say you did have your head up your butt and you drove into a protest, like that one guy did, we just watched last week, who didn't end up engaging with his sidearm. He was stuck. That little car could not make it over that barrier that they put in front of his car.
Yep.
That was his choice. On your car where it says R, it's not reverse. R is retreat, you know?
So let's look at that situation, because this is what I'm envisioning people finding themselves in with the more things, you know, popping off. First, I'm really glad you brought up the phone. You know, when I was commuting to Newport, which is like an hour from here, it was an hour there, hour back. So I was always on my phone doing whatever. The world wasn't as crazy, so I'm going to toss it to that. Now, though, when I drive, in my driveway, I go to Amazon Music. I pick whatever playlist, which recently has been Greta Van Fleet. I throw it up, and then we cruise, and I'm not touching my phone. Another thing, my wife recently went on the trip with one of her friends. I said the same. I was like, you need to be scanning and looking. If you see, if you're in a spot where you can turn, you like, you see, hey, there's a large group down there, turn around, go the other way, give me a call immediately. You know, if you are driving and now you're in that choke point, like you said, and you're like, shit, I'm stuck. Go, keep on going. To your point though, and I want to do a situation now where we analyze this guy and then talk about most people don't have concealed carry. So they're driving without any weaponry, you know, or at least a firearm. But this dude, and for those who don't know, he was driving what looked like a small little black car. And then he goes down the street and the protests get him. And one guy's in front of him. They pull out what looks like a metal barrier. They throw that. The car apparently can't go forward. And the mob's trying to get on and get in the car. And they're trying to break in. And understand, like the fish in the barrel, there's one man in this black car. And this whole mob is like pounding on it, getting at it. And one dude tries to open the driver door. And this guy was packing. So he shot him. That guy goes down. They all freak out. He opens the door, pulls up the firearm. Everybody backs up. And then he runs into the crowd and takes off. As a law enforcement and someone who's dealt with the judicial side of that, is he in? Did he do the right thing by taking the shot and getting the hell out? And this isn't legal. I'm not saying this is a – this is not – this recording is not legal. True. This is just man-to-man, my discussing this with you because I don't know. I think he is. Right. You know, that's a life-threatening situation in my eyes.
So pretty much every state in our union, our republic, our constitutional republic allows for a person would be tried upon what another reasonable person would do in the exact same situation without hindsight. Shoulda, coulda, woulda is not applied. With the media, it will be applied. With your friends, the shoulda, coulda, woulda will be applied. For officer-involved use of force situations, hindsight's not applied. It's what another reasonable officer would have done in that exact same situation, given the exact same set of facts, observations, feelings. In any use of force situation, whether it be law enforcement or a citizen, civilian, whatever else, and it's constitutional case law, the situation was tense, uncertain, and rapidly evolving. The guy drove up. I won't hindsight it, but I can't help saying because I watched the video a couple of times. The guy drove, it looked like two blocks. You know, me, just because my head's on a swivel and I might process information a whole lot differently than that gentleman, I might have stopped and turned way back before trying to drive through there.
I said exactly the same to Jackie. I showed her the video. I was like, he had time to see. Now, there's shoulda, coulda, woulda, we're armchair quarterbacking this. But me,
right.
Dude, there's a lot of people. I'm not going that way.
Yeah. And, you know, I've got some friends who live and work in Seattle. And he's like, we know what's going on. We don't go to work, you know, because he works downtown. He's some exec, but he's like, I don't go to work anymore. He's like, I remote work now. And I go, but not everyone has an option. He goes, we've done everything that they can to get all their people business wise out of downtown, you know? So I'll commend them for that, which is, you know, great job. That's freaking awesome. Protect your people. You know, if your people are down there, it's on their own choice, da da da. But for that gentleman, and again, he's a gentleman, because he, and here's why I call him a gentleman. He popped one round and didn't engage anybody else. None. You know, if it would have been a lunatic or one of the, who knows what, I'll just say lunatic and that covers everybody else. What if he would have got out and started engaging everybody, even though they all fled? Then he changes. Then he's not self-defense. Now he's being the aggressor. So he popped one round. It hit the guy in the arm. It was clear to see from the video I watched, because the way the guy spun and what I saw come up, it hit him near the arm. I'm also surprised that group actually had some medics on site downtown, but whatever. And they quickly started giving aid. The guy gets out of his car because his who knows what? I don't know why. Maybe his car is mobilized. Again, that barricade, he maybe tried to go. I don't know. And I won't allude to that. But he gets out, he leaves. He gets himself out of that immediate little situation right there on the street at the intersection. Yeah, he fled through the crowd, but he was just trying to protect himself. But he turned himself in later too. So he's a gentleman. He shot again. He shot one round and then he stopped. He wasn't brandishing the gun. He still had it out, but then he put it away. So again, gentlemen, he at least had his head on a swivel. When the mob encompassed his car, he couldn't go nowhere. You know, maybe the car was mobilized. Again, ours for retreat, if something happened like that, and you know for a fact there's no other vehicles, obstacles for your car, you know.
I want to be clear,
it's an option too.
You're very particular with your words, and you chose mob there. And that's exactly what this man was just driving. At that point, he had done nothing. Just a dude in the car, and that car was on a road where it's supposed to be, and they freaking swarmed it. They were smashing it, banging it, trying to pull him out. These people are not peaceful protesters. They're not a group trying to send a message. They were trying to rip this man from his vehicle to do God knows what. So we need to view this as what it is. These people were not saying, hey, come join our movement. They were saying, hey, get out of your vehicle. We're going to take your shit. And that's, you have to be willing to meet confrontation with confrontation. And it goes back to the mindset. And that kind of spins me to, what about your everyday nuclear family? There's no vehicle in the car. They're just cruising around. You know, if the mob gets you, is now, I mean, we just gave the perfect example. Is now not the time to be packing the pepper spray, maybe a bat, you know, knives. What's your EDC inside a vehicle if it's not a firearm? And by EDC, I mean everyday carry.
Right, yeah, everyday carry. I would advise, you know, a pocket knife if you don't have a sidearm or you are not willing to take on that responsibility of a sidearm, you know, a pocket knife. It's a tool. It's not a weapon. And every state is different, but most of all of our states in our union recognize that a knife is simply just a tool. It's how it's used. Makes it a weapon or not, it's a tool. What are you willing to do? How far are you willing to go to protect your family, your kingdom, in case something happened like that happens? And you didn't have your head on the swivel and you got in those situations. You know, truly, most vehicles are about 2,000 pounds. It honestly, even people who are out of shape, for 2,000 pounds, it might take only 8 people to flip that car on its side. You know, because once the wheels leave the pavement, it's a barricade. You know, it's a tree. It's a big rock because it can't move. So you have to be ahead of that action. If that happens, reverse, floor it, you know. Of course, make sure you stay on the road because you don't want to hit a building because then you're really screwed again too. Or Ford, because you already can see Ford. Ford's easier to drive. You have more gears that will get you forward as opposed to reverse. Most cars only have one single gear in the transmission for reverse, and it's limited to about, I think, 18 miles an hour. Most cars, again, there's other ones who can go faster in reverse, but Ford is probably your best escape route. You know, Teddy Roosevelt always did the deal with his family, his boys, you know, when they go on their little hiking trips or adventures, you know, can't go through it, go around it, can't go around it, go under it, can't go under it, go, you know, over it, you know, but you don't stop going forward.
And I couldn't agree more, obviously. When it comes to people with families and people that are cruising, like they don't want conflict, so they don't ever think of how to handle conflict. And I get it. Like, I would love for all of us to have this sunshine and rainbows, but that's not life. Life comes with challenges. It comes with conflict, you know, and there's a lot of people right now who are finding that it's time for the meat to meet the meat, and they've got to be able to answer the call. They've got to be able to to sound off and, you know, just step up. And you said, if your number's called, I'll say when, you know, and when we talk conflict, right now we're talking security. So it makes a lot of sense, but step back for a moment and let's look at any conflict, any environmental conflict. You know, two summers ago, I keep bringing the story up, but it proves the point. It's the closest I came to losing a loved one. So two summers ago, we were fishing. My son stepped on the algae on a rock. You know, he shot down like 20 feet. I turned around to my daughter. I was helping her. I looked back and she's gone. And the waves, I looked down, his face like disappeared under a wave and he's getting slammed against these rocks. And I flew like down these rocks, slipping, falling, busting myself. And I remember getting to the bottom, grabbing him. Now we're both getting slammed against the rocks. We're both like sucking water and I'm hanging on with one hand on the rock, one hand on him. And there was a moment where I decided both of us are coming out or neither of us are coming out. And I had to let go of the rock to reposition myself. And that's right when everything was going on. And I was fortunate enough to grab it. I just overhand, you know, pressed him up. And it was in that moment I realized if I was out of shape, if I didn't have the strength, so even with adrenaline, if I physically couldn't get him up, if mentally I panicked, my wife was like, holy shit. Like she lost her shit. She's like, my baby's in the water. She grabbed my daughter, but she's like, what do I do? Like there's nothing she could do. What if both of us hit that? You know, I don't have a son today. I don't know how I could live with myself thinking I could have trained and prepared for this moment. And you can't train and prepare for everything. But if you know you're excessively overweight, that's a liability. You know, you're dealing with preventable pain yourself, but also your family might need you and you won't be there because you can't run. You know, if you don't have a weapon, if you had an opportunity 1,000 times to go just get a bat, to get anything, and you get robbed, you find yourself with nothing and you get the shit kicked out of you, you know, and you had no way to defend yourself. Worst things could happen to family members. And how do you live with yourself? I mean, there's so much you do have control over that when the chaos comes and you don't think you have control, well, you had everything up to that point. Now at least you're in a good position to move. So it's not the zombies. It's not always going to be the protests. Sometimes it's going to be the rain. Sometimes it's going to be a fire, flooding, you know, a storm comes rolling in. You know, there's a lot of things that can happen. But if you're not of sound mind, body, and spirit, preventable pain will be suffered. And that kind of brings us to our last category, which is the man. And let me say the person, because our sons, our daughters, our wives, you know, women, people need to be able to defend themselves. So when it comes to personal security, and I know concealed carry, I mean, there's a lot of states where you can open carry, but everybody, my wife and I are both going for our concealed carry in the very near future. Good. It's, you know, there needs to be some semblance of, you don't just walk around with your hands in your pockets staring at the ground, you know? So Swift, when it comes to just the person, all you've got is their body. What is your, you know, template for personal security?
For hands-on, it's easy for me to say for the beginners who don't have anything else beforehand. It's easy, Krav Maga. And there's a reason behind it too. But for me and my family and my wife, I've been teaching and showing her little things here and there. Mine's a melting pot. You know, I've got, you know, all these years doing this, doing that, whatever else. Everything is stuck in my head. A mutual friend of ours, you know, Ivan, when him and I train, he's like, what the hell is that? You know, where'd that come from? Because he's not familiar with all the different arts that I've had to be put into or I've chose to go to. So all mine is really weird. But for people who have never had anything beforehand, my recommendation is Krav Maga. I don't want to say it's just extremely very violent, but the violence of action is very short. So it's like a shortened learning curve for how to defend with just hands, elbows, knees. And fingers too, because there's a lot of eye poking. I like poking eyes. But that would be the easiest one too. You said earlier too, you know, I would add machete to bats and other things like that. Whatever you choose, whatever you feel comfortable with, definitely train. You have to train. For bats, machetes, the art that you want to aim at or YouTube for certain beginning trainings would be Kali, K-A-L-I. I have a good friend of mine, Trevor Clarkson. He's on my, he followed him and I back and forth on Twitter you know, all the time. We're friends. He's a, you know, a Kali instructor, a master instructor. Again, it's weapon manipulation. Because once it becomes a defensive tool, it's a weapon. So weapons manipulation, for your safety as well. If it's a knife, again, Kali's one. Doug Marqueda's got some great instructional videos as well. You can contact them. You can find somebody in your, you know, region or your area. But for hands-on only, non-weapon, open hand or closed hand, would be Krav Maga. That's where I would advise someone to start. You know, there's karate, there's taekwondo, there's Jeet Kune Do. I can't think right now of the other one. But there's some other great ones too. But the learning curve is longer and higher. With Krav, it's even if you're not in the shape you want to be just yet, Krav. You know, Taekwondo's got kicking and this and that. And I'm not the limberest in the world. You know, I have trouble touching the floor with straight legs, but I can do it. But again, if you're not in the shape you want just yet because you are obese or you're not there yet, Krav. Krav makes it easy. There's a reason that the entire nation of Israel does Krav. There's a reason other countries do Krav. It's simple. It's instinctive. It's very violent if need be. It's, again, like I said, I'm a little lazy. I'm getting a little older. So if there's a conflict, I'm not backing away from it. I'm going to end it as fast as I can, the most effective way. Krav's there.
I'd say combining that with just the fact of paying attention, and you've solved 99% of your issues. You're capable of doing damage, but if you can see a fight and avoid the fight, that's probably the best fight you've been in. You know, I'm 33. It's not cool to go out and pick fights. Like, I got a family. Like, it's just, I don't need, you know, broken face. In a controlled environment, sure. But if I'm getting into a fight, it's because I had to get into that fight, you know. And it's important that a lot of people who find themselves in a situation, you probably could have avoided it if you were looking up and paying attention. You know, if you're always sitting on your phone, similar to the car, or you're always walking down the road staring at the ground, you know, there's a reason I'm constantly pressing shoulders back, eyes forward. That's how you see the world. That's your input. And you can't get caught off guard if you're like, hey, that guy looks shady. I'm not going to go walk near him. You know, trust the gut. The gut truly is like the second brain.
Oh, yeah. The best physical deterrent truly is being in shape. Have your head up. And if somebody looks shady, you look right them in the eye. You know, acknowledge that you're allowing them to know that you see them for what they are or what they might be. Not that you're judging or anything else. You're just like, for some reason you are triggering a threat response in me. I'm letting you know that I see you.
Then you're ready.
Not that you got to be fixated too either, you know, because you might walk down the street. The last week me and my wife went somewhere. I forget where we went. But there was this guy. I'm like, you know what? A little red flag. You know, I see you. But not that I say out loud, I see you. Just a quick, you know, right here, kind of like this. You know, I see you. You know, don't poke this bear. You know, don't poke this shark. Don't jump in my fish tank because I'm the shark here, type thing.
Well, it's like the houses, again, right? You know, you don't be the house that looks easy to be broken into. Don't be the guy who looks easy, you know, to be robbed or get your ass kicked, whatever.
Yeah. And that might be, you know, an upkept house, painted house, manicured yard. You take pride in your place, because that also translates to the nefarious people. If that person takes pride in their house, then they're going to protect it more than I want to deal with if I want in that house. So that might be one way. You know, my yard's pretty manicured, but that's one of my de-stressors, is taking care of my yard and my flowers and my roses and stuff like that up front. Yes, I do roses. I like my roses.
I wasn't going to bring it up. You did. You specifically had to let me know.
I will. No. But again,
the body's the same thing, nice, though. You know, you take care of the body like you take care of the house. You know, don't rob the house that looks good. You're not going to rob the body that looks good.
Right.
And if they are, they've already committed to violence. So it needs to be met with the similar, okay, we're doing this. You know, we're going to play, in your words.
Yeah, we're going to play. If you've done everything that you can do to deter someone from being stupid, but they still want to buy that ticket, then your mindset needs to change a little bit. Instead of still trying to disengage, if they buy the ticket, give them the full fucking ride. Don't let them go away unhappy from that ride. You know, there's no coward's exit on this ride. You know, you bought that ticket. You chose to keep being stupid. You know, everyone says it too. You know, play stupid games, win stupid prizes. To me, it's they bought the ticket. They're getting the full ride. There's no way out. You know, unless they just totally go, I'm done. But again, you know, sidearm out, get on your knees. We're going to wait here until the cops show up. What are you going to talk about? But again, that's me. That's my mindset, but that's my training and everything else that goes together. For anybody else, have your deterrence, have your lines in the sand, but make sure it's a line in the sand or a line. But once someone crosses that line, you need to stop trying to disengage. If they cross your line in the sand, stop backing up. You know, your back might be against the wall. Your family's back might be against the wall. There's nowhere for them else to go. You have to be that barrier, that obstacle, not a deterrent, not a speed bump. You have to be that obstacle that's immovable. If your family's back against the wall, there's nowhere else for them to go. And this person, because not all of the deals are all male, this person is still pressing. They're waiting for you to keep backing up. What's that, those two comedians, Caleb and Keel or Peel or whatever else, when he's like, you know, don't touch that car, don't touch that car. They showed the point that there's no line in the sand certain times. This is life. This is this life, this side of heaven. You know, shit gets bad fast. Have your line be the immovable obstacle to protect your kingdom, which is entrusted to you by our maker, God. You have to do what you need to do. And this person keeps on and on and on. You got to end it. Know the laws where you live. Understand it. Be ready of the mind to truly commit for an action to their action to protect your kingdom.
I think that's very well said. I mean, that is all of it packaged and delivered in a nutshell. So Swift, thank you for your time. I have a link to PraetorianSwift.com for those who want to get on the email list. I also am going to include links that we had talked about, the dry fire training, and then some of the links to the double key, the smarter guard and Kali, just to get people to get more informed. If somebody wants to work with you, what's the best way for them to reach out?
Email, DM me, we'll figure out something through Twitter. Again, I'm working on those e-courses. I'm actually working on an ebook too. It's just taking me a little bit, because again, I'm not the tech guy, so I'm learning my learning curve. But I'm trying to get as much out as I can to be helpful, to put you or anybody else in the most advantageous position regarding use of force, weapons, training, mindset. I also do coaching too. I have two coaching clients. I call it coaching because that's the easiest label for it. It's mentorship is what it is, for training and weapon stuff like that, as well as their life. Because he reached out to me just because, you know, I'm a unapologetic Christian, and I don't sugarcoat it. I'm not a baker. There's no sugarcoating shit here. So, you know, it is what it is. So there's just reach out if you got a question, if you want some help, or if you want a referral, you know, I can do those too. No big deal.
Awesome. This one went a little bit longer, but I'm glad. I mean, we covered a lot here. This is great. And I hope people who make it all the way through, you know, are taking notes and applying this knowledge and not just hearing it. But I will have links to everything below, all of your social media and whatnot. Thank you again for coming on, and for everybody who tuned in. Take care.
Thanks for listening. You can join our private men's only community at thefraternityofexcellence.com. And don't forget to find Zach on Twitter and Instagram with the handle @ZachSmall_.